Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In-play radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Week 9 in the NFL. Dave Kellner here on a William Hill's NFL podcast, joined as per usual by the host of the Beating the Book Megapod, Gil Alexander, to look ahead to the televised matches in week number 9. And at the end of the podcast as well, we're going to have a quick look at the Super Bowl picture as things stand halfway through this NFL season 2014-2015. Where has the time gone, Gil? Halfway through the season already.
It's amazing. It's unbelievable to think that. Well, I guess we'll be halfway through, I guess, somewhere in the middle of this weekend. But yes, halfway through, and I got some redeeming to do after last week.
It's been tough. The last 2 weeks, we've hit rocky waters, Gil, as it were.
Yes, we have. It was so smooth until then, but yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks.
Let's get straight stuck into the action this weekend. We're going to look at the televised games, starting with the matches on Sunday. And 6 p.m. we have the Arizona Cardinals at the Dallas Cowboys. And no line on this one at the moment, Gil. It's an NFC battle with the Cardinals sitting at the top of the NFC West with a 6-1 record. And the Cowboys, despite the setback at home to the Washington Redskins last week, sitting at 6-2 in the NFC East. No current line here with William Hill, Gil, and I presume that's the same state of affairs in Las Vegas right now.
It is the same state of affairs. Yeah, there's one offshore book that posts the line, but here in Las Vegas there is nothing at all. Nothing on screen.
This line is dependent on the health of Tony Romo, who was injured in that clash with the Redskins, had to receive pain-killing injections to re-emerge. It was a big loss for the Cowboys last week at home against the Redskins. A match that, from a personal perspective, Gil, I suppose, gave you great satisfaction.
It was pretty incredible. I think I mentioned on your show, I certainly did on mine, that there is a history between the Redskins and the Cowboys being division rivals of sort of the records being tossed out the window. I don't know if you have that in your football, where there's two teams that appear to be of different talent caliber on a year-to-year basis, but it's just the rivalry is such that it just doesn't matter, and strange things happen. Well, the Redskins and Cowboys are that. You know, and the Cowboys were 1-15 before they won Super Bowls. The team they beat was the Redskins, most famously. And there's a number of examples of that through the years between those teams. And I think Monday night was just a great example of that. Redskins with a third-string quarterback going in, blitzing Romo on every play, and look what happened.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible performance from the Redskins. And Jerry Jones has been, I think, putting a little bit of pressure on Tony Romo in the lead-up to this week, saying if he can tolerate the pain, he should be out there on the field, or words to that extent. He's the most talked-about general manager in the business, Gil, Jerry Jones. What do you make to his statements throughout the week?
Well, he's got a lot of nerve saying that, doesn't he? He's something else. Well, he's, of course, the owner of the Cowboys as well as the general manager, and I think every Cowboys fan, to a man, wishes that he wasn't the general manager, because it's very unclear as to what his ability is to be a general manager. The owner should fire the general manager, really, Dave, to be honest with you. But we, as bettors, I think you almost hope that Romo goes, in other words, plays, because I think then the Cowboys are a favorite in this game by maybe more than a field goal, and then you would want to take the Cardinals, who I think are a very aggressive defense. You know, the Redskins aren't known to necessarily be a aggressive defense on a week-to-week basis, but in the final game of 2012, when the Redskins were actually good and had the division on the line against the Cowboys, they blitzed Romo every play, and the Cowboys had no answer. And then they came back with it this past Monday night. The Cowboys had no answer. Well, the Cardinals, by their nature, are a aggressive blitzing defense, and I think as bettors, you sort of hope Romo starts so that there's a lot of value on the Cardinals. I think if Romo does not play and it's Brandon Whedon, then it's a bit more of a squirrely line that's a little less bettable.
How much do you think Romo affects this line then? If Whedon plays and Romo's out, injured, what do you think the difference in the line will be from a points number? What do you think that line will go to if Whedon takes the spot?
My best guess would be that it's about a 4-point difference. Now, do I believe that Tony Romo is worth 4 points? That's a different matter. But I believe the difference in what we'll see as the line will be about 4 points. I think with Romo, I'll go ahead and guess Dallas by about 4 in this. Without Romo, I think it's probably a pick 'em.
Wow. That is a big difference in the points, and I suppose that's why we want to see Romo from a betting perspective out there on Sunday evening. We talked about Romo and the Cowboys quarterback, obviously. That's to be expected in the lead up to this particular matchup. I see over here, Gil, I don't know if you feel the same way over there, as Arizona is something of an unfashionable team in the NFL, and Carson Palmer may be a quarterback that's destined to be consigned to the inside pages of the sports section rather than featuring that on the headline pages. That's probably not something that bothers him, because there's little doubting his efficiency. He's led this team to an emphatic winning record this season, only thrown one pick as well, but maybe a quarterback that's destined to be inside the pages of the sports section rather than the headlining, Gil.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. You know, we talked about it last week, how going into that game against the Eagles, that Carson Palmer was 10-2, or the Cardinals were 10-2 in their last 12 games with him as their starter, and he had a passer rating over that period that's better than Tom Brady, better than Colin Kaepernick, better than Andrew Luck, better than a lot of the guys that we would never think, conventionally, that he would have performed better than. But that is, in fact, the case, and I think it has a lot to do with just the fact that it is the Arizona Cardinals. They're not a traditional power in the NFL. These other teams, the Patriots, the Niners, you know, they have a history where as soon as we think of them, we immediately conjure up an image of long, deep playoff runs, if not championships. Cardinals don't have that. They've only made one Super Bowl appearance in their entire existence, and even that, when you tell people today, they're like, wow, yeah, the Cardinals were actually in the Super Bowl. They almost won it, too. Jeez,
yeah.
That was amazing. So we don't think of them that way, but they're a really, really solid football team. And over those, over those 11, that 11-2 run over the last 13, that's better winning percentage than Peyton Manning over the last 13 games, better than Nick Foles, better than Tom Brady. And Palmer, just to sort of give an exact number on it here, as I'm calling it up as I'm speaking, he has a 69.1 QBR, Dave, and a 97.1 passer rating over his past 13 starts. A 69.1 QBR attempts to indicate that given his level of performance, the Cardinals ought to win 69.1% of the time if you take his performance in a vacuum. That's great. Anytime you're at a clip of bringing your team to the cusp of winning 70% of the time nearly, you're doing great. And Carson Palmer is doing it, and still, as you point out, in relative anonymity to the casual fan. So a lot of value existing for bettors still on the Cardinals.
So I guess we are guessing to a certain extent here, Gil. If Tony Romo is to line up under center and the Arizona Cardinals get more than a field goal here, you'd be taking the Cardinals, Gil.
I would be, and it'd be a pretty heavy bet for me, yes.
Let's move on. Let's have a look at the Denver Broncos at the New England Patriots. Sunday, 9:25 p.m. UK time. The Broncos 20-33 on the money line. The Patriots 29-20 on the spread. The Broncos -3 with extra juice here at 5-6. The Patriots +3 at even money. This is a matchup that's always one to salivate over, Gil. That's mainly down to the quarterbacks as well. 16th meeting between Messrs. Manning and Brady, and the New England starter, Tom Brady, has a 10-5 edge over his counterpart in those previous meetings. Has this line moved, first of all, Gil? 3, currently, Denver Broncos with extra juice.
It really hasn't at all. It's been 3 with extra juice throughout the week, and I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's going to be that at game time. Maybe not with the extra juice. It'll be 3, though, I think, for sure. I don't think it's going to come off that number. And, you know, this game is everything, Dave. This is,
yes.
You know, it's one game in a season, but it's really the game from a fan's perspective. Let's say there was no such thing as betting. The casual fan would view this as the game of not only the week, but maybe of the year up to this point in the NFL. And when we talk about the Super Bowl and odds for the Super Bowl later in the show, really, these were the two teams that were in the AFC Championship last year. And I'm going to sort of kill the drama on that side and sort of indicate that those are going to be the two teams on the AFC side in the championship again this year, too. So this won't be the last time we'll see Manning versus Brady. But it sure is nice. You point out it's the 16th meeting between them. We ought to really, not to be too corny about it, but we really ought to appreciate this. You mentioned Brady leads that 10-5. It's really 8-3 during the regular season, and then it's 2-2 in the playoffs. So Brady and the Patriots have really gotten the better of Peyton Manning. Denver, as I've mentioned on the show before, since Peyton Manning took over at quarterback at the beginning of 2012, so what's that? That's 16, 32, I believe that's 39 regular season games with Peyton Manning. Only 2 have had results of outcomes, I should say, of less than 6 points, final results of less than 6 points. The Broncos either blow out teams, typically they do that, or in the cases, the rare cases where they get beat pretty handily as well. Well, the only 2 times that this has gone less than 6, one was a ridiculous shootout at Dallas a couple years ago where the Broncos won by 3. The other was last year where the Patriots beat the Broncos by a field goal in a furious comeback at home. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens again. It's a very tough game to handicap. One of my guests on the show yesterday asked a question, what's the game you'd least like to bet tomorrow? If you had to bet every single one of them on a side, but there's one you can't touch, this was their choice, and I don't think I disagree with that.
Denver are a stronger team defensively this year, Gil. I think as far as the matchup is concerned, they are definitely better defensively than they were when going to the Super Bowl last year. They are 6-1 in the AFC West. The Patriots, though, have stepped it up in recent weeks as well. And they are 6-2 in the AFC East. A lot of the work that's been done behind the scenes by John Elway appears to be paying off. He's alleviated some of the pressure on Peyton Manning this season.
Yeah, and you hit on why are the Broncos really favored in this game? It really does come down to that, I think. Their defense is, or has been anyway, through the first 7 games of this season, pretty spectacular. Elway went out and got DeMarcus Ware, went out and got Aqib Talib, and they've made all the difference in the world. DeMarcus Ware has been fabulous. Talib, no matter where he goes, is fabulous. And so you take a guy like Tom Brady, who last week was just spectacular, 30 of 35 for 354 yards. He had as many incompletions as he did touchdown passes. He had 5 touchdown passes last week. Anytime you're throwing as many touchdown passes as you are incompletions, you're pretty incredible. And that was the 5th game in Brady's career with at least 350 passing yards and 5 touchdowns without a pick. And that's the most of any quarterback since he arrived in the NFL. And then you take a Broncos defense that very aggressive, playing very well. Now, they haven't played anyone like Brady, but that said, you know, this is a good matchup this is the toughest matchup for Brady as well. So that's why the Broncos are favored. I also mentioned, though, in previous weeks with the Patriots at home, when they are either a very small favorite, not even a very small favorite, but a favorite of 7 points or less, or an underdog, Bill Belichick has an unbelievable record at home. I believe it's 40-19 against the spread. I may not have updated the last one, but it might be that exactly. 40-19 against the spread. When they're 7.5-point favorites or greater at home, they're actually under 500 against the spread. So based on that number during the Bill Belichick era, even though the Broncos' defense is great, that trend doesn't indicate that you'd want to quickly put your money on the Broncos.
Yeah, and take the matchup out of this. New England, in more recent times, 9-3 against the spread in their last 12 home games. Where do you see this match being won and lost then, Gil, from a pure personnel and tactical standpoint?
I think it will be won and lost based on the Broncos' ability to account for Rob Gronkowski. And in many ways, the Patriots' ability to account for Julius Thomas. The tight end position has become so important in the NFL over the last few years. And really, we owe Antonio Gates of the Chargers a sort of nod, and Tony Gonzalez of the Falcons. They really sort of, in the last decade, redefined the position. And now we have guys like Thomas and Gronkowski who have just taken it to a level that is unparalleled, and here they are, maybe the two most dynamic tight ends in the NFL, along with Jimmy Graham of the Saints, who face each other. And so I think that's where it's going to be decided, which defense handles the opposing tight end the best. If you can figure out the answer to that question, I think you have your winner.
I'm guessing this is a no-bet match for you, Gil. I just want to mention the total points as well. 54 is high here. 54 points, the total points line. Under is 10 to 11, over 10 to 11 as well, Gil.
Well, yeah, you know, that's the highest of the week. But the Patriots threw down 51 against the Bears. Not that the Bears' defense is as good as the Broncos, but still, 51 points is 51 points. Peyton Manning, in his last 23 games, it's probably the most amazing stat of the week. In his last 23 games, 77 touchdown passes against just 13 interceptions. 77 touchdown passes against 13 interceptions. That's unbelievable. And so if you break that down, he averages 3.3 touchdown passes a game. So when you look at it that way, you know, that total doesn't seem all that high. I could see it being exceeded very easily. I don't like the total either, because I think there's a lot of variance on that number, but it's properly set in my opinion.
Let's move on to the live game on Sunday night. This is the Baltimore Ravens at the Pittsburgh Steelers, Monday 1:30 a.m. UK time. The Ravens 10-13, the Steelers 11-10 on the spread. The Ravens minus 1.5 points at 10-11. The Steelers plus 1.5 points at 10-11. This is a vital clash in the AFC North, with both these sides sitting at 5-3. And we talked about the Broncos at the Patriots being a fierce rivalry. This one as well, Gil, one of the most fierce rivalries in the world of the National Football League.
You're 100% right. And yet, on a week where there are six teams on bye, six teams that do not play, and a couple or a few of them with really large point spreads, I would consider the Baltimore Ravens to be my lock of the week. I think that this is the play to make. It is a great rivalry. Before the game earlier this season, and Pittsburgh was defeated pretty handily by the Ravens 26-6 in week two of this season. But before that game, as you very accurately point out, really a tight series. The five games before that, all decided by 3 points or less. Four of them by 3 points, one of them by 2 points. And the Ravens have, by and large, gotten the best of the Steelers. Over the last seven games, the Ravens have won five. And the one constant has been that Baltimore has held Pittsburgh over the last 12 meetings, let's take it back even further, to just 15.4 points over that stretch. And a lot of it has to do with turnovers. The Ravens have committed 3 turnovers during the last 7 games, for instance, while Pittsburgh has given it away 19 times. Turnovers are always huge. They're always very determinant in NFL games. They're always highly unpredictable. I don't know that there's a predictive reliability to turnovers. But the Ravens would fall into the category here to me as just being the better football team. If Pittsburgh had not come out last week and just had this gangbusters, ridiculous game against the Colts, then I don't think this line is anything close to what it is. But yet it happened, and so it is, and I think we exploit Baltimore as a result.
It is an interesting time, Gil, for the Ravens to be going into Heinz Field, because last week they did lose one of their top corners in the game, in Jimmy Smith, not only on their defense, top corners in the NFL. Do you think Ben Roethlisberger will think he can continue rolling the ball this week after last week's performance against the Colts, because the Ravens do look maybe slightly weak in the secondary?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, absolutely, if you're game planning with the Steelers, they're going to try to exploit that for sure. You know, Andy Dalton did. Andy Dalton was able to exploit weaknesses in the Baltimore defense when they played, and I think Big Ben is going to look at it the same way. He's going to, you know, they're going to game plan. They're going to say, whatever weakness we can find, let's go after it. I will say this, though. You know, Baltimore, the defense of Baltimore, they lost the game against Cincinnati last week on a 10-play, 80-yard drive, which Cincinnati cashed in with less than a minute left. I think it was 57 seconds left in the game where Cincinnati took the lead. Baltimore came back and they threw an 80-yard, seemingly threw an 80-yard touchdown pass from Joe Flacco to Steve Smith Sr. to regain the lead. But it was nullified on a pass interference by Steve Smith. I thought it was fascinating after the game, if you believe in such things. I'm typically a stats guy. But I thought Baltimore handled it so well. They said all the right things. Steve Smith Sr., a typically volatile player, you know, took it well in stride. He's like, well, it happened, and he said all the right things, and they just appeared to be really poised about it. Not just Smith, Flacco as well, and every Raven that I saw interviewed. That is a great sign of maturity in an NFL team. It's as if they know, they are aware that these things happen, but that they're still a really solid football team from top to bottom who has been killing teams. So, yeah, when Jimmy Smith went out, Andy Dalton was really able to exploit that. In fact, Dalton took advantage of that to the tune of 9.5 yards per attempt. And he did that most notably against Jimmy Smith's replacement, Dominique Franks. So I think Roethlisberger, to answer your specific question, says, there you are, Dominique Franks, let me go after you. Mm. I just don't think it's going to work as well.
No, because you'd expect the Ravens to put more pressure on Roethlisberger with their three pass rushers than the Colts did, because they've got three guys there in Terrell Suggs, Elvis Dumerville, and Pernell McPhee that can really pressure the quarterback of the opposing side.
And you have, more importantly, a week to try to disguise whatever deficiencies Dominique Franks has. So, yes, one of the ways you talk about it is the way you just described, but it's one thing to get that injury in the middle of the game and say, oh, my God, we got this guy, what do we do? With a week to figure out how to mitigate his deficiencies, I think they're far better off. By the way, it should be said, though, that I could make the same case on the other side of the ball, right? If we focus on Jimmy Smith, well, the Steelers' defense has tons of issues, and Cortez Allen is a guy that Andrew Luck just picked on mercilessly last week. So much of football is finding a weakness and just going after somebody mercilessly. It's very cruel in that respect. Well, Pittsburgh, their last three opponents have averaged 9.35 yards per throw. So the stat that I mentioned about Andy Dalton being able to exploit Dominique Franks, well, Pittsburgh's defense is just sort of that as a constant. And their coach, Mike Tomlin, he didn't say whether he thought Allen will regain his starting job after that performance. 60 targets by opposing quarterbacks against that specific Pittsburgh weakness, Cortez Allen. That's the third most in the league in terms of opposing targets on anyone in the NFL. So Joe Flacco is thinking the exact same thing Ben Roethlisberger is in that respect.
A quick word before we leave this matchup on Justin Forsett as well, because he's proved to be a revelation for the Ravens at running back. He needs to continue to be productive for the Baltimore Ravens. Is suffering with a little bit of a knee problem as well that kept him out of practice on Wednesday afternoon, but that shouldn't be too much of a concern.
Yeah, it shouldn't be too much of a concern, at least everything I hear. But and you point out with Forsett, the net effect of Forsett is not only is he effective as a runner, but it keeps defenses honest, and it has really made a difference in terms of how much Joe Flacco's been sacked this year. You take the pressure off, you have to account for the run, and Flacco has been, generally speaking, been given plenty of time to throw the football. He's been sacked just 9 times after going down 48 times in all of 2013. That has a lot to do with how well, or really explains a lot about how well the Ravens are doing just on that alone. And it should be noted, if the Steelers decide, okay, well, why don't we take a different approach? Why don't we blitz Joe Flacco, much like the Redskins did to the Cowboys? Well, the Steelers blitzed Flacco on 45% of dropbacks in their previous game, which is a lot conventionally, and Flacco just torched them. So they're kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't, and Forsett's presence, very key to the whole mix of it.
Baltimore Ravens, the best bet this week for Mr. Gil Alexander, a -1.5 points on the spread at 10-11. And we finish off this week with the Monday night football match. This one taking place in the early hours of Tuesday morning, UK time, 1:30 start time. The Colts at the Giants. The Indianapolis Colts 4-7 on the money line. The New York Giants 31-20. On the spread, the Colts -3 with extra juice here at 5-6. The Giants +3 points at even money. Nationally televised match, Gil, as always, important to both franchises as well right now. The Colts have a one-game lead in the AFC South, while the Giants desperately need to make up ground on the Eagles and the Cowboys in the NFC East. Last week, as mentioned, the Colts lost at Pittsburgh and allowed them to put 50 points on the board. The Giants, meanwhile, slipped to 3-4 with a 31-21 loss at the Cowboys, having been dismantled by the Eagles the previous week. But that loss against the Cowboys, Gil, came in week number 7. This is week number 9. They come into this match on the back of extra rest and the bye, and that probably came at just the right time for the Giants as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting stretch for the Giants, even with that bye wedged in between. It's a 6-game stretch. You mentioned it was Philly, then it was Dallas. That's tough enough. Then came the bye. Now you got this tough game against the Colts. After this, the Giants are going to travel to Seattle. Then they're going to have San Francisco at home and Dallas, the rematch with the Cowboys, at home. So this is a really brutal stretch of games for the Giants. And if anything, the Colts might be, you know, a little bit of a rest in that group. So this is one that they're looking at as, well, we better win this one because we don't know what happens the next 3 weeks, if they're really being realistic about it. Now, I don't know if anyone says that or admits that, but they're thinking that, I can promise you. And the Colts are funny because they were a team that wise guys in Las Vegas this year have not really liked. And they went on a 5-game winning streak, did the Colts, after losing their first 2 games of the season. Well, last week, everybody decided they loved the Colts. And the Colts were the most heavily bet team in the Las Vegas Hilton Super Contest. It's actually no longer the Hilton. It's the Westgate Super Contest. And look what happened. The Colts, as you say, just get absolutely crushed. Their defense, which had been statistically so great across the board, just falls off a cliff. And I think all of us, none of us really thought of the Colts as the best defense in the NFL, but no one really expected Big Ben to go 522 yards on them with 6 touchdown passes. So that was interesting. So it's a game with two teams, as you point out, that really haven't really defined themselves this year, quite frankly. Mm. I think even at 5-3, the Colts, we don't really know who they are yet, and this will go a long way towards showing us who they are.
How do you rate the Giants as a team then, Gil? You mentioned they've not defined themselves yet. They've got some big losses to get over here. They lost Victor Cruz out for the season, their most talented wide receiver. Rashard Jennings, he's on the sidelines. This will be his third straight match out. That offense looks full of young talent, talent that's still developing in the NFL, though, Gil.
It is. We're sort of fortunate in that I have a rotating guest on my Megapod every week, and this week's is actually a reporter of the New York Giants, and she was talking to us from the Giants practice facility, and she's a bit of a better herself. She likes a wager now and then, and she flat out said, she goes, "Oh, I'm taking the Colts." So that's a Giants that's a Giants reporter sort of letting you know what she feels about their identity. That loss of Rashard Jennings means something, at least it did to her. And the Giants are a tough team to figure out, not only because of the injuries, just because when you think about them, Eli Manning's a tough guy to wrangle. Meanwhile, the Colts, during the Andrew Luck era, after a defeat, 11-1 straight up, six straight 300-yard games going in with that stat also looming as well. I don't know what to make of the Giants. I'd love to give you a better answer and a more definitive one, but they're like many teams in the league. I don't know what team this is. The injuries are problematic. You know, they also don't have John Beeson, who was a middle linebacker they were counting on. He's going to need season-ending surgery to repair a torn tendon and broken bone in the right foot. They've barely seen him at middle linebacker this year. I think if they had Beeson, they had Victor Cruz, and we were seeing the same line, and of course Rashad Jennings. I'd love the Giants, but they don't have any of those guys. Those are tough guys to overcome. Injuries matter. And, you know, I think this is going to come down to the Colts' ability to run the football. This is Andrew Luck's Achilles heel, that he does not have someone that he can truly rely on the backfield. Now, that wasn't the case when they were winning games during that five-game winning streak. They were averaging 33.8 carries during the winning streak, so they were in many ways able to keep their own defense off the field. But against Pittsburgh, just 10 carries. They were behind. The Giants are going to try to put them in that same position, and if they can make Andrew Luck one-dimensional or the Colts' offense one-dimensional, they'll have a shot.
You mentioned then, Gil, the guest that you had on your podcast, the New York Giants reporter, going with the Colts -3. Which way are you leaning here, Gil?
I'd lean that way, too. I don't have huge conviction on it because it is a Monday night home underdog, and you will not go broke, I promise you, Dave, betting historically on Monday night home underdogs. It's the most viewed single game, well, maybe not this week because we have New England and Denver, let's be honest.
Yep.
But I think that on a traditional week, it's the most viewed game of any week, and I think we're human beings. Players are human beings. They want to perform well in front of a national audience, home crowd. And so to me, it's not with a lot of conviction, but it's tough to bet against Andrew Luck here, isn't it?
Ah, absolutely. The Indianapolis Colts 4-7, the New York Giants 31-20 on the spread. The Colts -3, the Giants +3 points this weekend. That's Monday Night Football. So just to recap these, Gil, just before we've got your lock of the week, which is the Baltimore Ravens -1.5. We'll get the shock shortly. The Cardinals at the Cowboys, that line very much up in the air at the moment. If Romo plays and the Cardinals have more than a field goal on the Cowboys, taking the Cardinals there. The Broncos at the Patriots is a game just for watching, isn't it, in many ways, Gil?
It is. I mean, look, we all like to have a little money behind things, but yes, I think this is one you just watch and enjoy.
The Ravens to beat the Steelers, -1.5, and maybe leaning towards the Colts -3, but with no real conviction. What's the shock of the week, an underdog that you think could cover the spread this weekend, Gil?
I think it's the Houston Texans at home. As a two, right now as we do this, a two-point underdog at home against the Philadelphia Eagles. I mentioned this on the Guessing Line show that I did right after last week's games. Philadelphia, if you watch that game against Arizona, first of all, they probably should have won. Arizona beats them on an amazing play in the final minutes to beat them. That said, Nick Foles in that offense just does not look that good. Now, they're going to get Darren Sproles back here, which is no doubt going to help the Eagles' offense. But the Cardinals' defense, which we talked about earlier in the show in their matchup with the Cowboys, they're an aggressive defense. Houston is aggressive as well. And they've got J.J. Watt, and they've got Jadeveon Clowney ready to go in this game. Home game for the Texans. Nick Foles looks really inaccurate. If you watch these Eagles games, you know, he had 27 touchdowns against two picks last year, which was unheard of, and of course we knew he was never going to do that again. But the fact that he is now a interception machine, Dave, and you look at some of these passes that he is throwing incomplete, it's a little confusing what he's doing out there, and I think Houston's going to wreak all kinds of havoc. They're my shock of the week in a week where honestly there's not a lot of options because there's, you know, the biggest favorites on the board are all home teams and I don't see any of them losing.
Yep.
And there's fewer games this week. So my shock of the week would be the Texans at home catching a couple points against the Eagles. I think they win it outright.
This must be a difficult week. We mentioned it on a few previous podcasts. You partake in the Super Contest in Las Vegas where you've got to pick five matches on the spread each week, and the overall winner gets a cut of the pot, Gil, as it were. This must be a difficult week this week, Gil.
It is a difficult week. It's actually a great point. Now, again, up until 2 weeks ago, as very reflective on your show, I was in 46th place out of over 1,400 people. Well, I've put together two crappy weeks in a row, so I'm no longer near the top. But I'll just tell you what my five picks are this week. How about that?
Yeah.
And it was very slim. It was very slim pickings because, again, three games are eliminated with six teams on byes, and then there's the really big spreads. And really big spreads don't mean that you can't pick them. You might have conviction on them. But I don't, you know, you take Oakland-Seattle over two touchdowns. Well, I'm not betting on Oakland, sorry. And I don't want to lay all those points on Seattle. And there's a lot of games like that. Cincinnati is double-digit favorites. That's tough. Kansas City is a lot of points to give against the Jets. And, boy, what a terrible call that was on my part, picking the Jets last week. Jeez. But my five picks are Baltimore, as we mentioned, Houston, as we just mentioned, and my other three is I really like San Diego at Miami. I don't really understand why San Diego is an underdog here. I'm taking the Chargers in that game. I am taking the Redskins, Dave. Yes, not a homer call. But the Redskins are getting Robert Griffin III back for this game. I like them at Minnesota in a pick'em. By the way, one of the gentlemen on my show loves Minnesota, but I'm taking the Redskins in that game. I think he is mistaken there. And the final game for me is, and now I'm thinking what it is, I like Cleveland. Cleveland's giving less than a touchdown versus the Buccaneers. I think, like the Ravens and Steelers, Cleveland's just a better football team across the board than the Buccaneers. Cleveland didn't look particularly good a couple games ago, but I think Brian Hoyer steadies the ship, and I think they cover easily. So for me, again, it's Baltimore, Houston, San Diego, Washington, and Cleveland. Those are my five Super Contest picks.
That might have to be a running feature on this particular program, Gil, because I know a lot of our listeners like following your thoughts on the NFL. I know some people will be superstitious and won't want to give their picks out, but if you're happy to do that, Gil, that would be superb.
I'm absolutely happy to do it, as long as I have them decided by then, because I have to. There's a deadline a couple hours after your show, then I'm good to do it. Let's do that. Maybe it'll get me back to my previous 6 weeks of greatness.
hopefully so, Gil. Let's finish the podcast then. As I mentioned at the start of the pod, that we were going to talk about the overall Super Bowl picture as it stands with us just about halfway through the season, the regular season. The Denver Broncos 21-10 to win the Super Bowl. The Seattle Seahawks 8-1. The Green Bay Packers and the New England Patriots both 10-1. The Cardinals, the Cowboys, the Saints, the 49ers all 16s. And it's 18-1 and bigger prices the remainder. We chatted about the Broncos and the Patriots this week. Those two teams you clearly expect to go and battle it out for the AFC Championship. I suppose the NFC maybe a little bit more uncertain, Gil.
Yeah, did I just hear you say the 49ers were at 16-1?
Yes, that's correct, Gil.
Well, that to me just leaps off the page. I mean, I would go and buy that ticket right now. Because to me, that is really underrated. The 49ers don't have Patrick Willis. Well, they didn't have him last week. He'll be back this week to face the Rams, their standout linebacker. But more than Patrick Willis, because Patrick Willis has sort of lost a step this year, even though he's still got a lot of name recognition. But the Niners are going to get back Aldon Smith on defense, their standout pass rusher, who's had a little trouble with the law, as we like to say over here, Dave. And even more significantly, they're getting Navarro Bowman back, who really is their, maybe along with Justin Smith, their single best defender. Navarro Bowman is unbelievable. And nothing's really changed offensively. Maybe the Niners haven't been quite in sync, but, you know, once the playoffs start, and believe me, they'll get to the playoffs, they're going to let Colin Kaepernick loose. You know, they try to, during the regular season, to preserve him from injury, sort of say, stay in the pocket, don't go crazy running the football. Well, in the playoffs, in the postseason, all bets are off, and Colin Kaepernick's going to go nuts. The Niners at 16-1, you don't even have to say anything else. That's the best bet on the board to me.
Superb. Half the odds place 1-2 as well for them to make the the Super Bowl this year. 16-1, the San Francisco 49ers, the pick right now. I think maybe that particular price, an overreaction to all the off-the-field issues the 49ers have had this season, a lot of talk about Jim Harbaugh and his uncertain future. Maybe the compilers are distracted by that somewhat.
I guess. You know, look, and I'm the first person to say, Jim Harbaugh is not going to be the head coach of the 49ers next year. I suppose the only way he could be is if they won the Super Bowl, and even then, who knows, because they seem to hate Jim Harbaugh for all of his winnings. You know, he must be an awful, and I'm saying this seriously, I'm not even trying to make a joke, he must be an awful guy to deal with. Maybe he's a nice guy in person, but he must be an awful guy to work with. He's certainly an intense guy. Maybe that's part of it. You know, I don't know what, you know, you look at the NFC in general, and you sort of say to yourself, well, okay, well, is there some dominant team in the NFC? Well, Seattle's certainly not dominant through seven games this year, right? They were on the cusp of being 3-4. They seem to have some sort of personnel issue every week. I'm sure Seattle's going to be fine. Don't get me wrong. They'll be in the playoffs. But San Francisco, right now, I'll tell you what part of that 16-1 is. Part of that 16-1 is that the Arizona Cardinals have such a good record right now. And so if Arizona is able to maintain that lead in the NFC West, that would mean that the Niners will be a wild card team, and therefore there's no home field advantage as they progress through the playoffs. Mm. But we're saying this in week 9. There's a lot of football still to be played. And by the way, Dave, even if the Niners are on the road, I still love them at 16-1. They are a tried and true playoff team. Yes, the Seahawks have been their kryptonite, but that's because they had to play a away game at Seattle. They're the only team that's going to go in there in the playoffs and beat Seattle in Seattle. They're the only team that has a shot. I think the Niners are the best team in the NFC, and when all is said and done, they might be the best team in the NFL, although, of course, the Broncos are going to have something to say about that.
Superb. Fun chatting to you this afternoon, Gil. Enjoy the rest of your day. Good luck with the Super Contest this weekend, and I look forward to catching up again next week.
Dave, always a pleasure. Redemption Sunday. That's what I'm calling it.
Thank you, Gil. Speak soon.
Thank you, Dave.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.